breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yep. Let's all go to the time for us to talk movies and life. That's what we do, and Alan Adams pays a visit to us. Happy Monday to you, Mr. Adams. How are you on this glorious day?
And a happy Monday to you as well. I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Weird out there, isn't it?
It's unsettling. Like, the last couple of days have been a little odd. I don't care for it.
I don't mind the warmth. I'll take that.
Oh, sure, but
I feel like it's setting me up for something, though.
Well, it's just like, I don't know. Yeah, it just feels a little, something's off. Something's off.
How about Stella and the kitties? Do they sense the changes in the weather?
Stella is not great with this kind of weather, like, especially if it's windy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have an old house, and so like when it really gets whipping, like it makes the house makes a lot of noises that are like that I can't explain. So I can't expect a dog to understand what's going on. So she struggles a little bit. The cats, they don't care.
No,
I mean, they're cats.
Ginger has, I tried on multiple occasions, very little interest in going outside today for more than the briefest moment.
Oh, yeah. It's like they'll go out until they'll basically do what the bare minimum they think they need to do to get back inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Which to me was not enough. And I tried to explain that to Ginger. And I tried to play to her emotions. I said, you'll be more comfortable if you make sure everything's out. Like, yeah, whatever. Where's my bed?
Yep. No, I want to lay down now.
And by the way, get a towel and dry me off, will you please? My hindquarters are a little soggy.
Yes, my jod purrs have some have some water on them.
Yeah, boy. How was your weekend?
I was pretty good. Pretty good. Relatively, stayed pretty close to home, which was good. And, like, had some stuff to do around the house, that sort of stuff. Like, nothing really too exciting, honestly, but that's okay. Like,
yeah, well, sure.
You know, it's the holidays, so there's plenty of excitement most weekends. So, like, having a quiet one, not the worst thing.
We've already, by the way, I will tell you this, we've already reached out to our number one babysitting option to try and make sure she's clear for New Year's Day.
I appreciate that very much. The planning is in the works. One of the reasons that we were close to home this weekend was trying to get our house into a reasonable facsimile of functionality so that, however many people wind up showing up, there will be room for them.
First in 4 years?
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yes, January 2020. So, 2 months before it hit the fan.
Man.
That was the last time we entertained at scale.
We've missed the Adams New Year's gathering, which is always my favorite holiday event of the year.
We're big fans as well. We're very excited to have the opportunity to sort of to reignite that tradition.
By the way, after your recommendation last week, I watched Candy Cane Lane over the weekend. Yeah, that was fine. It was good.
You had a good time, right?
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, Eddie, there was a level of effort from Eddie Murphy in this one. I thought it was good.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. It's always nice to see Eddie in a movie where he's not like where you can't like see him like counting, like counting dollars,
right.
Like in his head while he's in the middle of a scene. Yeah.
And Tim Simons was great.
Right. Yep. No, I was. It's like I said. It's always a delight to see him. And he makes. Dude makes good choices.
He does.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he makes really good choices. And we can only hope that continues.
Indeed. Indeed. So what have you seen since last week?
I've seen a couple.
Okay.
A couple of streamers. Actually pretty sparse at the box office this weekend. This past weekend. But that's okay. There are a couple there that I'm still that I haven't had a chance to see yet. The new Godzilla movie I'm very interested in, among other things. We streamed from home this weekend. Saw a couple. There was on Peacock we watched Mr. Monk's Last Case. The Monk movie. 12 something years in the making. And then on Netflix, I watched the very good Leave the World Behind.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by Sam Esmail, based on the book of the same name by Rahman Alam, which I believe I talked about with you.
In
2020 when it came out. And that's on Netflix. And that is just an absolutely, it's a powerhouse cast. It's Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, like really Kevin Bacon, like really stacked. And that is a much more serious film than Mr. Monk's Last Case, as you might imagine. So which would you like to talk about first?
Let's start light. We'll move up to the serious. Plus, it's USM grad Tony Shalhoub.
That's right. It's so funny to watch something like this because, again, as I said, it's the last episode of Monk aired. I want to say in 2011.
Wow,
2012.
Was it that long ago?
It was a long
ago?
Time ago.
Jeez.
Right. It has been a fairly long time since these characters have been revisited. But Andy Breckman, who created the show, he wrote the script. Just about everybody came back. Tony Shalhoub, obviously, like you can't have a Monk movie without Monk. But Ted Levine, Traylor Howard, Jason Gray Stanford, Hector Elizondo, like all the sort of the regulars from the sort of late stages of the show, pretty much everybody came back. One of the things, and we'll get to the movie itself, but one of the things that I noted pretty early on, you know how in Hollywood there are a lot of people who will use whatever means necessary, medical or otherwise, to stave off the rigors of age?
Yes.
Ain't none of these people doing that.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, it's just like it didn't really click for me until Ted Levine showed up. And it's like, I mean, that dude was always craggy, but like it's like it's one of those things where it's almost novel to see someone allow themselves to like age naturally. Mr. Monk's Last Case, it is set today. It is 12 years after the show, the finale of the show. Our Mr. Monk is currently, well, he's still dealing with the aftermath of COVID, which, as you can imagine, a germ-phobic, yeah. He struggled a little bit. Although there are a couple of, gags about where it's like, really, in a lot of ways, we're all Monk now, like wipes and hand sanitizer and the whole thing. But yeah, the basic gist is, he is planning the wedding of his, stepdaughter. Like it's the relationship is difficult to parse. At the tail end of the show, we learned that his late wife had had a daughter that was given up for adoption. Part of the sort of wrap up of the series was, him discovering that he had this connection to his deceased wife. Her name is Molly. So what we see them now, and they're preparing for Molly's wedding. She's getting ready to marry her sort of investigative journalist husband, her fiance. He's a really adventurous type. Monk had promised to help pay for said wedding using the proceeds of a book deal, but his compulsions have led him to write a book that is largely about basically like the schematics of his stove, and he's got a 2,000 page manuscript that has nothing that the publishers want, so that causes some friction, but. The gang gets back together to come to the wedding. Natalie Teeger, that's Traylor Howard, Randy Disher, Jason Gray Stanford. They come back from the East Coast to take part in the festivities, and we discover that Molly's fiance is working on an expose about I believe his name was Richard Eden or something like that. It's this billionaire type who's basically all of the billionaires just sort of mushed together.
Good.
He started an e-commerce company to raise his money, but he's also a social media tycoon and he wants to go into space. So it's really it's just like we're really just running the gamut.
Right.
And he's also he's also kind of a jerk. So Molly's fiance has some suspicions about how our guy Eden's business partner, he passed away in a scuba diving accident.
Oh,
You know what? Scuba diving accidents, they're rarely accidents. That's one thing
especially
I've learned
in movies
from popular cultures. Yeah. If it's taught me anything, so if you die scuba diving, it's because somebody killed you.
Right. I saw that on Matlock, for God's sake.
Right. Yeah. And he's getting too close, and wouldn't you know it, something happens. Mm-hmm. And despite having been out of the game for a dozen years, there's no one out there who can solve a potential crime quite like Adrian Monk. And we're back in it. And that's when we learn, among other things, that like the former Captain Stottlemyre, Ted Levine, is now the head of security for our man Eden.
Oh,
which complicates matters a little bit. But yeah, and look, if you've ever seen an episode of Monk, you know exactly how this movie plays out. It's basically if you took it's like a supersized Monk episode, basically. And that's okay. I'm not looking for anything more than that from something like this. It was remarkable how kind of like comforting it was. Like, because you know, it's I'm a big proponent of that whole sort of like blue sky era of USA programming, all of those shows. Like, there's something very, very simple, and there's a familiarity to it. But you know, it's comfort food in a lot of ways. And
it was a good ensemble too.
Yeah, you know, it's a really, and you know, the performances are really strong, and you know, everyone's clearly having fun, and everyone's like, it's fun to get the band back together and that sort of stuff, and. I mean, is it a particularly riveting plot? No. Like, it's very clear from the get-go, like, who done it? Like, it's not like it's a big secret. But that was always kind of Monk's charm, is, like, you always kind of knew who done it, and it was about him, like, connecting the dots to figure out how they did it.
I'm just looking up. Ted Levine's a year older than me.
Oh, man. he has lived a much harder life, Rich.
Good. Makes me feel better.
I will tell you that. Every time his mouth moves, the crinkles on the sides of his face, like, it's just some pretty deep ravines in there.
Wow.
Yeah. No. You're in baby face.
Oh, yeah.
Super smooth.
Ooh, you want to touch it?
But yeah, so again, like, Mr. Monk's Last Case, like, if you're a fan of the show, like, you should absolutely watch this, if only because it's a chance to, it feels like catching up with old friends in a lot of ways. Right. And, you know, and sometimes that's all you want.
Nothing wrong with that. And what service is that on?
That's on Peacock.
Ooh, do we have, I don't know. Have to check every time you mention a streamer, like, do we have that service? I know we got Prime, you know, the shipping. All right, we'll check that. All right, so that's Mr. Monk's Last Case. Let's get serious now and tell us about Leave the World Behind.
Okay, so I really loved this book. This was a best, you know, one of my favorite reads of 2020 when I read it. Like, it's written by Rahman Alam. Won a lot of got a lot of sort of like year end acclaim as far as that goes. I'm not at all surprised that they made this a movie, because there's a sort of contained quality to the story that I think lends itself really well to the conversion to cinema. Sam Esmail, who directed, also wrote the screenplay, adapted the screenplay. You know, best known for his work on Mr. Robot, you know, but that sort of like paranoid thriller type vibe is perfect for this story. So, like I said, Julie Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, Kevin Bacon, it goes on and on and on. Like, just you've got this incredibly talented central cast. So really any story that they're going to tell is probably going to work. But this one's pretty compelling. So you've got the Sanford family, Amanda and Clay. That's Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke. They are they live in Brooklyn. She's in advertising. He teaches, I think, creative writing at City College or whatever. They are we meet them as Amanda has basically decided, you know what? We're going to get out of the city. We're going to get out of the city for a weekend. We need a break. Like, we're going to take the kids. We're going to Airbnb a place on Long Island. We're going to go to the beach. We're going to take a mini vacation. Our man Ethan Hawke's like, great, let's do that. They load the kids into the car. They head out. They land at this beautiful house out on Long Island. They're really they settle in. It's a gorgeous house. There's a pool really close to the beach. They're really excited about this experience. We start seeing things getting a little weird pretty early on. Just like little things like, oh, like, you know, why isn't the radio working right in the car? And like, oh, hey, like the daughter's trying to watch the finale of Friends on her tablet and the internet's not working, you know, just little things like that. And it's just like, oh, that's weird. Well, they wind up going to the house, the TV's not working, but again, it's like, whatever, like we're on vacation. So they wind up going to the beach. They're having a great time. Right up until a very, very large boat, an oil tanker, essentially grounds itself on the beach, like to the point where like people are fleeing because there's this tanker running into the beach. No one really knows what's going on. And so they wind up, everyone sort of evacuates. They go back to the house and they start trying to check their phones, check their, you know, but the Wi-Fi's out. Their phones aren't working. There's no service. Like things are like, they're starting to feel a little bit isolated, but no one's stressing out about it too much. They're just figuring there's some sort of logical explanation. That night, very late, there's a knock at the door, and who is it? But George Scott, Mahershala Ali, and his teenage daughter, who have, you know, he's in a tuxedo, she's in evening wear, and they have arrived because they were at the symphony. They heard that there was a blackout coming. They heard there was a blackout in the city, and rather than trying to make their way back to their home on Park Avenue, la di da, they went to their sort of vacation home. There's some tension as the Sanfords, particularly Amanda, is immediately suspicious. One could argue it's a little on the nose, but she's suspicious in the way that a middle-aged white woman would be suspicious of a black man showing up on her doorstep at night. Yeah, it's not great, but it's one of those things where it just sort of contributes to the building tension. But the next, you know, there's some back and forth. The Scots ask if it would be okay if they stayed. The Sanfords are uncomfortable, particularly Amanda. Clay is very much a live and let live kind of guy. He's like, whatever, let's do it. But eventually they wind up staying as well in the house. But the next day is when things start getting like, you know, the internet's not back. TV's not back. We look out and we're randomly seeing like abundant wildlife in the backyard. We're talking about like big, big numbers of animals that you would not necessarily expect to see in a Long Island backyard. Along the way, we're getting little flashes where it's like the signals are like catching for just a moment. And so we see, and that's when we start to get little bits of pieces of this idea that there's been some sort of cyber attack and, you know, the power grid may have been affected and we're not entirely sure, you know, and it's led to some pretty significant environmental concerns and on and on. And the mystery really starts to build and they're isolated and they're not really able to find anyone to communicate with. And so all they're left with is their own thoughts, their own speculations. And as you can imagine, that spirals a little bit, particularly when we learn that, our man George's job as a financial analyst means that he has access to some pretty rich and powerful people who might know a little bit more about what's going on.
Oh, the plot thickens.
But they haven't necessarily shared that with him directly. And onward and upward. I'm not gonna go too much farther just because I don't want to spoil any of the specifics. But just know that it is. It's very tense. It's very taut. I love it's got a real thriller vibe to it in a way that that I always enjoy, particularly when it's like, it's not like a psychological, like slasher type thriller. It's much more sort of cerebral in that way, with those sort of speculative, like sci-fi ish elements kind of tossed in, which makes for a really compelling story. And it doesn't hurt when you've got, you know, three, you know, phenomenal actors just really just tearing it up in Roberts, Hawk, and Ali. I think my favorite thing about this, one of my favorite things about this movie is I saw, I think it was, I want to say it was the AV Club, but I can't say for certain, but there was an interview with Sam Esmail where he was talking to, he got notes from Barack Obama, because this movie is the first like fictional film from their production company.
I forgot that he's a producer now.
Yeah, like they've done mostly documentaries, but this is their first like full on like fictional feature. But Esmail gave an interview where he talked about getting notes on the script from Obama, and Esmail's like I was freaked out because. Not because of who was giving me the notes, but of how these notes were talking about how pretty on the nose the representation of what was going on was.
Wow.
It's like, oh, so the president thinks this is feasible? Like, this is something, oh, dear God.
Yeah, right. That's even scarier.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's like,
because he knows things.
He does. Yeah, he does know some things. But yeah, so it's all treated very with a degree of sort of verisimilitude that I think contributes mightily to the film's effectiveness. It's smart. It's, you know, the performances are excellent. It's a really compelling story that's really well constructed. I will say it's a bit of a departure from the book, which in some spots, which I understand. Like the reality is, there's an interiority to the book that I don't think necessarily fully translates to the screen. And so they've sort of brought in some larger external elements to kind of make it more cinematic, which I think is fine.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I think the fundamental story is more or less unchanged. And so, you know, it's being true to the source material while also acknowledging that some changes needed to be made in order to make that leap from page to screen. That being said, I think they're both extremely, extremely good pieces of media. So I would advise you watch the movie, then read the book, then watch the movie. I think having done both, I don't think the order matters, honestly.
Why do you think with strong source material and some A-list talent, they went the Netflix route?
You know, that's a good question. I think it boils down to the fact that, probably Barack Obama wanted to make this movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they have a Netflix deal,
right.
You know? So it's like, but again, if we're talking about making a movie that, you know, isn't based on previously existing IP or, you know, it's not a sequel, it's not part of a franchise, like, Getting a thinker, because it's 2.5 hours long. Like, it's not like, you know, and it's not like it's action packed. Like, it's very much.
So you might get more eyes on it on Netflix than you would in theaters.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I think so. You know, they've certainly done a pretty good job of promoting it. I think it's in their top 10 as far as like, you know, their top 10 movies or whatever. Their sort of ongoing list. And I mean, the truth is, like, the streamers are where you go for that kind of freedom at this point.
Right.
Like, I don't like it, really.
Mm.
It's not, like, you know, it's not ideal. Like, I'm someone who really believes very strongly in the cinematic experience. I think seeing a movie like this on the big screen would be very cool. And again, it did have a small, a limited release, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just... Like, this is where filmmakers are going now to make this kind of movie.
Will there be some Oscar buzz for this, you think?
I think so. It might be, you know, it's hard because, you know, particularly in the performance categories, you only have, you know, five slots.
Right.
But like, Would it surprise me if one or more of these folks wound up getting a nod along the way? No, not at all. Like, they're so good, you know, and they're so committed to the storytelling, and it is engaging enough. And I know the Academy's not necessarily in love with rewarding genre film, but I mean, I think they've gotten better, especially as, you know, the approach to genre filmmaking has gotten a little bit more sophisticated mm-hmm. in terms of the sorts of stories that are being told, the sorts of messages that are being conveyed, and the sorts of actors, directors, writers who are being involved yeah. in that sort of stuff. You know, it's not the throwaway, you know, direct to video stuff that you used to find in Blockbuster anymore. Right. Like, this stuff matters. And so, yeah, I think there might be a little bit of buzz for it. Will it get it? I don't know. Like, it's really tough to say. It's such a weird and fractious year as far as yeah. like the awards are concerned. But like I said, I wouldn't be shocked.
Cool. Alan Adams talking movies with us. Pass the popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll visit again next week.
Let's do that.
Looking forward to it here on Downtown.